From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Back in February, we talked with Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Lisa Gartner about her investigation into widespread abuse at Glen Mills Schools in Delaware County, the oldest reform school in the country. Here she is talking about one particularly chilling incident involving a Philadelphia student at the school she calls AW to maintain his privacy.
He was in group one day, and it was cold, and he pulled his arms inside his sweater, which might seem like a small thing, but Glen Mills is very regimented and strict on rules. So a counselor, unprompted, walked over, hit him several times in the head, lifted him up over the back of a couch, slammed him on the floor, and proceeded to choke him with the neck of his sweatshirt while other counselors held him down.
Since her story was published, change has been coming fast. So today, we're bringing you our original episode from February. And in a few minutes, we'll bring Lisa back in to talk about why Glen Mills schools could be closed for good. Today on The Why, Beaten Behind Closed Doors, Revisited. My co-host Annette John Hall and I started off by asking Lisa about the nearly 200-year history of Glen Mills.
Glen Mills is the oldest reform school in the United States. It was originally founded in the early 19th century as the Philadelphia House of Refuge.
This is the Glen Mills Schools. Sitting beautifully in suburban Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, just south of Philadelphia. By the looks of it, you would think that this was a small college, but it's actually a school for troubled young men from all over the United States and even some international locations.
It has a capacity for more than 1,000 boys. It has a reputation as the best that a boy can hope for when he's sentenced to a placement like this.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Glen Mills School's 125th campus celebration.
So Lisa, C.D. Farinola, who is considered as really establishing the culture at Glen Mills, who was he and what was his significance?
C.D. Farinola started as the executive director of Glen Mills in 1975, and he was there through 2007, which is a long reign.
The aggressive, very violent inner-city gang kids, that's our type of kid.
His method was sort of a peer pressure model.
CBS News magazine 48 Hours did a segment on it and on the school.
If you're going to get to this kid, you got to get to him through his group, through his gang.
So you essentially have created a different gang with different values.
That's right.
Boys informed on each other. And in fact, they had to inform on each other a certain amount of time to gain a quote-unquote status. Status at Glen Mills allowed you privileges like home passes and the chance to compete on sports teams and being able to travel through campus with a buddy but without a counselor. Farinola's hallmark, in addition to the peer pressure model, was a focus on athletics. He built state-of-the-art facilities, stadiums, gymnasium, and he wanted to hire athletes. You know, he believed that hard work and teamwork and these, you know, big dudes, for lack of a better
term.
Some
of them are really big dudes.
Really big
right,
dudes.
Right. Chris Medina, who was the counselor who slammed AW to the floor, was over 6 feet, something like 280 pounds. So not only are there these big guys walking around who are in control of these students, but Farinola would like to brag, actually, about eschewing social workers and not having anything that he deemed touchy-feely when he could just have these athletes, you know, teaching these boys how to be men.
Lisa, how far back were you able to find instances that boys at Glen Mills were being abused?
Looking through newspaper archives, I found glimpses of incidents from the 1990s. And I found a corrective action plan that Glen Mills submitted to the state in 2000. At least 18 counselors, I believe, had, you know, choked, kicked, punched, slammed children And Farinola made big promises to change the way that training happened, to make sure that kids weren't threatened who tried to report. They said that their phone calls were supervised, that they were hidden from their families when they had bruises. It was not only abuse, but a cover-up. Glenn Mills committed to making a lot of changes, and the state accepted it and moved on. Now, in the course of my reporting, I found boys, now men in their 30s, who were at the school immediately after this, and they were assaulted violently as if that had never happened.
So, Lisa, just listening to what you say, there's obviously a culture of violence in the school that has been going on for a long time. How are teachers being trained when it comes to handling students?
The state has specific rules and laws about how to restrain students. Counselors at residential facilities like Glenn Mills are allowed to use physical restraints on students if they're in imminent danger to themselves or others. But there's a big difference between a restraint, which limits a child's movement, and punching, kicking, choking, slamming. It's never allowed. It's against the law to use a restraint as a form of punishment. But what I found is that counselors were routinely using this kind of abuse to punish students for something that's honestly typical teenage behavior, talking back, breaking rules, running away.
You know, staff are required, if they sense there's abuse, it's state law, I believe, that they have to report abuse if they suspect it. Did any of them speak out when they knew about these incidents?
The majority of counselors turned a blind eye. They knew it was the culture of the school, and they were afraid of getting ostracized or called a snitch or demoted or fired. But some people did speak out. There are currently 3 wrongful termination lawsuits, 2 of them in federal court, against Glenn Mills, from counselors who say they were fired for reporting child abuse to their superiors.
Is Glenn Mills unique, or is this kind of reflective of issues in the juvenile justice system in a broader way?
I think it's reflective of broader juvenile justice issues. The thing about Glenn Mills is it's supposed to be the place where this didn't happen. It's supposed to be the best. It's supposed to be the best place that you could hope your son would go if he got caught up and had to go somewhere. And it begs the question of, well, what are the places you wouldn't want your son to go?
Yesterday, I brought Lisa back in to talk about the impact of her reporting. Since you were on our show in February, what's happened at Glenn Mills? Can you give us kind of a brief timeline?
Sure. From the time the story published to this happening a month later, judges around the country started pulling their boys from Los Angeles and Houston to Pittsburgh, and of course Philadelphia did the day the story ran. So there were only about 60 or 70 boys left at Glenn Mills. Shortly after the story ran, Governor Wolf ordered a review of the state's oversight of Glenn Mills. So the Auditor General launched a full investigation into the school, and that's ongoing. Shortly after that, the Office of the State Inspector General, which has law enforcement power, subpoena power, also announced that it would be conducting its own investigation of Glenn Mills. Toward the end of March, the state issued an emergency removal order for all boys remaining at Glenn Mills.
The facility has a month to remove and place students into new facilities amid abuse allegations.
And then a week later, when the last boy had been removed from Glenn Mills campus, the state announced that it was revoking all 14 licenses, effectively closing Glenn Mills.
And that was early April.
Yes. Now, Glenn Mills has said that it will appeal both the emergency removal order and the license revocations. There was a pre-hearing conference on May 2nd where both the state and Glenn Mills agreed to a 6-month stay, a hold on the proceedings. So I should also mention that the Juvenile Law Center and its partners, the Education Law Center, PA, and Deschert, announced a class action lawsuit against Glenn Mills.
Are there any charges yet, criminal charges?
I was actually at the Delaware County Courthouse yesterday because Christopher Medina, one of the two counselors who had been arrested after an assault on a boy last summer at Glen Mills, was supposed to appear, but it got rescheduled for June. Medina is accused of doing most of the attack on the boy from Philadelphia. There was a second counselor who allegedly on video punched the boy toward the end. He had his charges dismissed and in a lower court, a magisterial court in Delaware County. Apparently, the district attorney in Delaware County was not happy about that and is considering refiling.
Yeah. So since the story broke, I mean, really within about 6 weeks, I mean, all of this took place and Glen Mills, the oldest reform school in the country, you know, closed. Were you surprised? Did you expect things to happen that quickly?
To some extent, you know, you get a little jaded as a journalist. You don't necessarily expect people to take action. But it was nice to see it being taken seriously by the community.
You know, when we last talked, you said the thing that stuck out to you through your reporting is that Glen Mills was supposed to be sort of the best of these type of places. And it made you wonder what might be happening at some other places that house troubled youth. Are you looking into that now, or do you know any more about that now than you did when we last talked?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're looking into it at this point?
I can say that I am looking into why this happened at Glen Mills for so long and whether those mechanisms allowed similar violence and, you know, problems to happen at other residential programs for youth in Pennsylvania.
Lisa, thank you for coming back in.
Always a pleasure.
The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Tweet me at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.